A reading this morning from James chapter 1, verses 1 to 8. James, a servant of God and of the Lord Jesus Christ, to the 12 tribes in the dispersion, greetings. Count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds, for you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness. Let steadfastness have its full effect, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. If any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask God, who gives generously to all without reproach, and it will be given him. But let him ask in faith with no doubting, for the one who doubts is like a wave of the sea that is driven and tossed by the wind. For that person must not suppose that he will receive anything from the Lord. He is a double-minded man, unstable in all his ways. This is our story, the word of the Lord.
Please stand with me for the gospel reading. The Holy Gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ according to St. Luke. Then he said to them, "Nation will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. There will be great earthquakes, and in various places famines and pestilences. And there will be terrors and great signs from heaven. But before all this, they will lay their hands on you and persecute you, delivering you up to the synagogues and prisons, and you will be brought before kings and governors for my name's sake. This will be your opportunity to bear witness. Settle it therefore in your minds not to meditate beforehand how to answer. For I will give you a mouth and wisdom, which none of your adversaries will be able to withstand or contradict. You will be delivered up even by parents and brothers and relatives and friends. And some of you they will put to death. You will be hated by all for my name's sake, but not a hair of your head will perish. By your endurance, you will gain your lives." This is the gospel of the Lord. Well, good morning, everyone. It's great to see you. For those of you who don't know, my name is Ryan, and I am the pastor here. And we are studying the book of James. So this is our current study that we work through verse by verse, chapter by chapter. And we are in these opening piece of wisdom that James is giving Christians who are going through hard times to help them understand how to get the most out of it. Now, here's the truth of it. Trials aren't fun. Is that fair? Going through hard things, going through difficult things is not overly enjoyable, is it? Based on your response, I think you would disagree. Who's looking for more trial, more hardship, more difficulty? Anyone? So James is trying to help Christians understand how best to go through hard times. And so here's what he says. "Count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds, for you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness." We all go through this difficult stuff, but James is saying there's a specific way of looking at these difficulties that we can actually come to a place where we have joy when we meet new challenges. Doesn't that sound like what we actually want? How we want to live? We don't want to feel this threat when difficulty comes our way. So the question we're asking is, what do we need to know to be able to authentically experience difficulties or trials with joy? James says it has to do with how we mentally count or frame what we experience. This really highlights, I think, a common conversation in our society today. that the power of our mind. Have you heard, you know, YouTube videos or Instagram shorts or podcasts talk about the power of your mental framing before? I think it's a common conversation. We're becoming more and more aware that how we view the world, how we view difficulty, how we frame what we're going through actually defines kind of how we experience it. But here's the truth of it, is that trials reveal our instabilities in our lives. Trials without Christ, they dominate our narrative. They discourage us. And they actually, what it feels like is if I get more trial in my life, it's going to destroy me. Felt that before? I had a major trial this week because I have to teach on this stuff. And so if you have to teach on stuff, it's almost like, okay, prove it in life. And I don't appreciate that sometimes. I feel like, you know what, it's hard enough to talk about it. Don't make me have to do it. But that kind of is essentially hypocritical of me to think that way. So what happened this week is I had my laptop, my computer for work, which has all my files, all my videos, all the work I've done over the last 7 years. And it had an unfortunate interaction with a fresh cup of coffee. And this happened on Monday. And so, and we won't get into the fact that my cloud settings were not appropriately set. And so everything that I've worked on for the foreseeable past is kaput, gone, with no ability to get my hands on it. So I took it to a computer tech, and he was like, the liquid went directly to your hard drive and fried all your memory. I was like, great, awesome. And so this was a testing of my framing, let's say, a testing of my faith. Because this is what James is saying, is that when trials come, God is going to use them for the purpose of revealing what you trust in, revealing what your faith is invested in, what your life is depending on. And so I had to sit there. At one point, we cleaned it up, and I held my computer up, and I was watching it drip out of the bottom of it, and I thought, this can't be good. And instantly, because what I was working on that morning was my sermon. And so I tried to just go, okay, I'm in it now. The trial's happening. I need to notice my frame. And what was my way of viewing things? And did it fit with what's been revealed about the good news of Jesus? And if it wasn't true of what I've seen in Jesus, then I had to name it and go, you know, whether it's victim or scarcity, all these different feelings that are coming out of me, I had to name it and then repent of it, turn from it, to say, look, I'm not going to view this situation through this framework anymore. And I'm going to believe the cross changes this loop for me. And instead, I'm going to trust in the resurrection, and I'm going to use a new frame that frames this in such a way of there's new possibilities coming. Because what I could easily do is say, everything I've worked on is lost, couldn't I? But the work I had to do was say, everything I've worked on is in and with Jesus. He's been teaching me all this time. He's the one I've been working with. And so my way of framing that was to say, if I have Jesus, I still have everything I worked on. If I have Jesus, he's going to be enough for the future of how to figure out how to work this out. Now, driving to the computer tech, I may have transferred some of my anxiety onto other people driving around me. But that was part of the process, was to go, okay, I've got to recognize if I'm mad at the guy riding my butt, then that means I'm still mad about this situation. And so I got some reframing to do. So I was working on that. Now, here's what I noticed. The benefits were almost immediately noticeable for me. Have you ever been in a difficult situation and you know your framework is not helping? You ever been in that? You're emotionally wrapped up, lashing out at other people. You know, whatever problem just happened, I'm now adding problems on top of it. You know that feeling? By doing the work of choosing the right frame in Jesus, it de-escalates the situation. The situation doesn't have as much power. It just becomes a problem we get to creatively pursue how to solve. One of the phrases we use in our household is, if we become anxious, emotionally agitated, that's now the problem. We can't fix the problem. Right? Because whatever you're going through, as soon as you become emotionally dysregulated and, you know, aggressive, then we're no longer working on the trial. We're now working on just regulating our emotions, aren't we? And so this is James's point, is to go, look, before we can work on any of this, we've got to be responsible for what's going on inside of us. And without Jesus, our fallen frames keep collecting more and more data in this self-defeating loop, feeling more helpless, more afraid, more attacked, more out of control. Does that feel like stability in your life? It really doesn't, does it? And so because our experience is being formed by these negative frames. And then as we experience, we're like, yeah, so my frame says I'm a victim, then my experience, I feel victimized, and that's more data in the vicious cycle to convince me all of my life I'm a victim and I can't change any of this. Anyone relate? This is why our lives feel erratic. This is why our lives feel unstable. It's not that there are trials in this world and that makes us unstable. It's that our mental, emotional framework of it makes it increasingly unstable. So our therapeutic culture today seeks to manage and medicate our instability in the face of trials. It tries to just go, well, let's lessen the symptoms. Let's create really strict boundaries so you never interact with anything hard. Let's cushion you from life so you never get dysregulated. What does that lead you to? Isolation, loneliness, fragility, doesn't it? I think we all saw that in COVID. You know, hedging myself off from everything didn't make me feel safer. So Jesus here, though, is offering us something different, which is to redeem trials, to utilize trials for our good. And this is how Jesus does it. Because in his full humanity, he fully experiences every human trial, and yet never accepted any of these fallen, self-defeating, destructive frames, Jesus has power over trials. Because Jesus took the full weight of trials and suffering and loss on the cross, as though he did, he has power over trials. Because Jesus rose from the grave victorious, he is over all trials, in order that all trials would bow before him and serve his purposes. In his ascension, he's now utilizing the presence of trials in the world for our benefit. Now listen, eventually, Jesus is going to completely destroy sin and evil. The sin and evil that produces trials. But until that day, Jesus is going to show how good he is, how powerful he is in the midst of these existing trials by working within them. So here's what we see. In Jesus, the cycle gets broken. He's the only solution big enough to break that cycle that's going on inside of us. And instead of the loop then reinforcing negative biases and discouragement and despair, James is saying the loop is going to lead us into transformation, where the misplaced faith that is the real cause of our instability is invited into a rightly placed faith in the Savior. So what comes out of this then? What does James say this produces? What benefits? This is where we come to the next phrase. James says, going through our faith being tested, so tested to see what we're trusting in. Once that gets tested and we rightly then invest that trust into Jesus, it then produces something in us. And what does James say it produces? It produces steadfastness. What's another word for steadfastness? Stability. So we're now seeing how in Jesus we can move from instability to stability. Now the Greek word for steadfastness, it means to remain, to stay, to abide. The literal meaning is to remain under. So James is saying it gives us the ability to stay put under pressure, to endure a burden without running away, to persevere faithfully when circumstances weigh heavily. So here's where I think we struggle with it. We go, it's not an escape. Jesus doesn't just give me an out from trial. He doesn't just give me a way to run away from trial. James is saying Jesus gives you a way to frame it in such a way that you can handle it. Now, I know initially we're like, dang it. So I got to stay in it. I'm still in this. And James is saying, yeah, you're still in it. The goal is actually to kind of accept that and be more present in it. But what's being described here is not just patience. Oh, I'm stuck in this. I got to wait for Jesus to get me out. But a courageous endurance, an active, faithful, staying power. So what the pressure does is it forces our heart to focus its trust on Jesus alone. Not the old tools, not the coping mechanisms, not to think too much about the circumstance, but to focus on Jesus. And the heart, the spirit holding to Jesus, then trains the mind to reframe the trial according to Jesus' vision. And the vision is this, that this is going to redirect and refine my faith, and it's going to cultivate stability in me so that the chaos of this world doesn't dictate my sense of self, my thinking, my ruminating, my moods, or my behaviors. Who is sick of their whole personality being defined by their circumstances? Like, isn't that annoying? When you're like, I'm so grumpy, I'm so moody, I'm so stuck in my head because of this thing that's going on in my life, I feel disconnected from everything I love. You ever feel that? That's super frustrating. To go, why can't I stop thinking about this? Why am I so worried about the future? Why am I thinking about work on Saturday? Why am I thinking on this problem when I'm on a date? Why am I on my phone when the Jays are winning, right? These are the types of what am I thinking about? And James is saying that this way of like holding to Jesus and then training the rest of ourselves to actually be okay and be present. But that requires this concerted, focused effort. The effort to trust in Him and not revert back. The effort to stay present and connected to God and yourself and to others, and the effort to not give up and run away from it. We all want to feel stability and strong in this life. But here's the thing, stability and strength aren't felt in the absence of trial, but in Christ's sufficiency in the midst of trial. That's when you go, even though all of this is happening around me, I know I'm okay. I feel good. I feel okay in this. I have agency. I have the ability to do good things. I'm not just shut down and broken down by this situation. Isn't that what we want? So James is saying, look, we've got to accept the weight of trial with joy because we know God will use it to produce stability in us. Stability and strength. Now, here's the thing about strength. When Jackie and I first got married, we moved to Southeast Asia and we went to live there and do missions work in slum communities and ministries to those stuck in sex slavery and different things like that. And in the process, I got super sick. I won't say how I got sick. It may have been because I thought, I could brush the teeth with this water. I'll just get used to it. I did not get used to it. All it took was one time, and I was like crazy sick, and it lasted for months. So I lost 60 pounds in 3 months just from being sick. So I kind of came back skin and bones. And then, you know, I was in my mid-20s. We started having kids. We're in ministry. I was not taking care of my physical health at all. And so I gained all that weight back, but it had no, how do I say this? There's no muscle in there whatsoever. Okay? It was just gushiness. And, you know, you're starting to get older in years. So by the time I hit my 30s, I was like, I need some help. You know, all this is soft and weak, and I don't feel very good about myself. And so a friend of mine started working out at this gym, and he's like, why don't you come with me? I'm like, sure, I'll come with you. And he's like, okay, so we're going to set you up on some weights today. We're going to do some weight resistance, some weight training. I'm like, okay, well, I can do this. I was strong once. And he's like, okay, lay down on the bench. We're going to take these 20-pound weights, and you're going to lay down, and you're going to lift them up, and then we're just going to do some chest pressed reps. I was like, I can do that. In my mind, I'm still 18 and fit as a fiddle. And so I lay down, and I remember pushing the weights up and watching them go like this until they fell over. I was like, I did not expect that. And so every time I try again, it was just like, where are these going? I had no control. Dropped one on my forehead one time. It was very embarrassing. And I thought, I never want to do this again. I'm going to leave. And here's the thing about building strength. Is you might think you have some general strength, but when you start doing focused work, you start to realize my stabilizer muscles, that's what they're called, are not there. They just don't exist. And often when you're learning new workout techniques, it's almost like you're trying to find the muscle that's supposed to do that work. Has anyone gone to the gym and you're like, okay, I'm supposed to do this exercise, and I don't know which part of my body does the work here as I do it. That's what the process of strength building is. When you train a muscle, strength doesn't come from comfort. You have to actually put it into a place of discomfort where it finds its ability to resist it. Every repetition is a small act of remaining under that weight. I got to stay under the weight and control it, and I got to push it back up, and I got to learn to control it in that. And then as you gain stability, over time, you can eventually start to build strength. But stability has to come first. Now, in the biological process, the load or the weight that you put your muscle under creates micro tears in that muscle. And in the muscle fibers, it breaks down to the point where that muscle doesn't want to work anymore. It's like, I'm too tired, and it fails. That's the word we use for it. And those tiny breakdowns that seem destructive, your body responds to the tears and then builds them back stronger, bigger. And that's the process of building new strength. The process is called hypertrophy. You didn't know you were going to get a workout lesson today, did you? Now you think, Ryan, you don't really look like you work out. I'll be like, that's fair. Imagine how I would look if I didn't. Now, when we look at James's phrase, what we see is this idea. The testing of your faith produces steadfastness. So testing is the load placed on the muscle. Steadfastness is what happens when you don't drop the weight, even when it burns. And the goal is to get to that place of tearing in order to rebuild it. That creates the godly strength. Now, here's the problem. If we avoid resistance, your body actually weakens. If you avoid, numb, or reject trial, your faith will stay fragile. But when you stay under trial, trusting that Jesus has you, He's your spotter, so to speak. He's not going to let the weight crush you. The weight becomes a tool for transformation, not destruction. So if we were to put this all in spiritual terms, trials are God's way of training us into health and wholeness. Faith is the muscle that He's seeking to develop, and steadfastness is the strength and endurance built by staying under that weight. Staying in stress until grace reshapes you. This should change our relationship with how we see stress. We tend to see stress as the great enemy of our lives in our society. But what we want to do is reframe that stress to go, I'm under the same pressure, but I have different tools, different muscles to handle it and to respond to it. Where the problem comes in for us is that every fallen frame tempts us to drop the weight early, to escape the very process that's meant to build the strength. We talked about this over the last couple of weeks, but if we take like self-pity or fear, the victim mindset or the scarcity mindset, it seeks to avoid trial, to avoid the weight through helplessness. Like when trials come, some of us collapse into our story. This always happens to me. I don't have what it takes. And that victim scarcity mindset, when it's combined, the belief that life is against me and that I'm too weak to endure it, it's like going to the gym and saying, the weights are unfair, and I'll get hurt if I try, so I'm never going to do it. But if we never do these things that are good for us, we never grow in stability and strength. And so the avoidance looks humble. Oh, I couldn't. Oh, it's too much. Oh, I can't do that. But it's really just an unbelief. It refuses to trust the one who provides strength and weakness. Now, perfectionism and offense, this idea of performance and entitlement frames, they seek for us to avoid trial through pride. If I can't do this perfectly, I failed. Or I shouldn't have to deal with this at all. And so when we do that, we're responding to God's process of training and rejecting it. We're essentially saying, I reject this grace because I need control over it. I can't feel weak. I can't fail at this. But the reality is failure is the point. Failure is what leads us to growth. And we're so stuck on this idea that I've just got to do it right all the time. I never want to let myself fail. Then we never get to grow. The amount of conversations I have to have with my kids about school to say, failing is the goal. Do you say that to your kids? You should. Our Western mindset that says 100% is the goal sets them up for self-destruction. But saying to our kids, failure is the goal. Take the test and fail. Work hard at it, do your best at it, but when we see the points that you fail, then we see the points we get to grow. We see the points we get to develop. I don't know if it's my bloodline, I don't know what it is, we're not the most naturally gifted students in my family. So the goal is to be as honest about our failure, to work hard, and see how we can grow into mentality. What's the word I'm missing? grow incrementally. That's the one. Thank you. See? It's okay to fail. But as we do so, we start to get better and better and better and have higher ability to actually produce authentically. The goal is not to fake it enough to pass the test and move on and forget the subject forever. Sorry, am I on an education rant here? The goal is to really learn it. Do you actually know it? And so the same is taking place here, is to go, Jesus is trying to help us see we're too hard on ourselves. And the other side of it is that it feels like I'm too good for this challenge. I shouldn't have to be put under this. But the goal is actually to bring us to the end of ourselves, that we would find him. So here's the summary. Every fallen frame is just faith misplaced. All the frameworks that send you into your emotional, mental spiral is a misplaced faith that should be put into Jesus. In weakness or in pride or unbelief or perfection. Steadfastness is faith rightly placed in Jesus enough to stay under the weight long enough for grace to make you strong. So every trial that you avoid is going to haunt you. It's like a bad horror movie. In the back of your mind, you're always going, this thing's coming for me. This thing's coming for me. I got to worry about this. I got to avoid this. I got to think about something else. That framework is haunting you. Wakes you up in the middle of the night. Interrupts true connection with other people. And so every trial that you avoid is haunting you. But every trial that you accept in with Christ will build you. That's the promise James is saying here. And so it breaks all the molds and gives you a very Christ-centered, focused, growth mindset about your life. You hear our society talk a lot about growth mindset. Here's one that actually comes from evidence that Jesus is who he said he is, has done what he's promised to do, and has conquered all this evil and makes growth possible as a gift, not just mustered up in and of yourself. So when trials press down, the goal isn't escape, it's transformation. This is the cheesiest thing I'll probably ever say from the pulpit. But the burn is the blessing. Yeah, you could put a t-shirt, we can make t-shirts. You know, like for the gym. Christ Church Oceanside Gym Club. The burn is the blessing. I'm going to keep selling you on this, Rob, until you agree to it. Okay. Because it's the sign. Like, when you're in it and you're, man, this is hard. I hate every minute of this. I want to escape it. But Jesus. Then the grace is breaking down the old self so resurrection strength can rise up in its place. Don't we want to be the kind of people in the midst of difficulty that go, whew, this is a doozy, but we got this. Calm in crisis. Centered in chaos. So here's the questions I want you to ask yourself this week when you're going through trial. They're not going to be up on screen, so you just have to listen. Does this situation change who Jesus is? So maybe let's do this. If you're comfortable with it, maybe just close your eyes for a minute. I want you to take a couple breaths. Just be present. Stop thinking about whatever you're thinking about. And identify what's the part of your life right now that you feel like falls into this category of trial, of difficulty. And I want you to ask yourself, does this situation change who Jesus is? And now I want you to ask, does it change who I am? Like ultimately, is all my value, all my personhood, everything about who I am, is it wrapped up in this? Even things that are really important to you, you realize, no, this is not all of who I am. And now here's the key question. Do I still trust Jesus? In the midst of this thing that I'm in, do I still trust Jesus? Is he the one I can count on? Is he the one that's enough for me? If you answer yes to that, then here's the promise. Then I am going to grow under this weight then. I'm not going to be crushed by it. I'm going to develop strength in the midst of this. And so I'm even going to go so far as to embrace it. I'm not going to fight this trial anymore. I'm not going to resist this challenge. I'm going to embrace it. Okay, you can open your eyes. What we'll see next week is once we get to that place where we know we trust Jesus in the midst of it, we receive the promise that we're going to grow in it, and we embrace, we accept this challenge. Right? So if you imagine if I hand you the weights at the gym, that you're not, instead of going, ugh, I can't, and letting them fall to the floor and then having to cry about it, instead we're going to hold the weight of the situation and go, I'm in it. I'm going to do this. I'm going to try this. And then what we're going to see next week is what happens from Jesus next. Can I just read it to you? I don't have time to preach on it, so let me just read it to you. And let steadfastness have its full effect, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. Does that sound like good news? But we can't get to that part. We want to feel that part because we're so busy avoiding, resisting, rejecting the reality of what we're in and Jesus' sufficiency in it. Do you see it? So I want you to hear the promise again for next week. And let steadfastness have its full effect, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. And we're going to see all the good news that's in that statement. So for today, we'll now turn our hearts towards the table. And so if you take a moment for private reflection to go, okay, Jesus, I think I'm ready to recenter all of my being on you this morning.